This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
We've got Dr. Geoffrey Robinson, who's a lecturer in Australian Studies at Deakin University. Good morning, Geoffrey. How are you?
I'm very well myself, and good morning to you and to your listeners as well.
And welcome back to the show. Upper House voting reform in Victoria, I love stats and stuff, and I saw... some what I call not interesting results. I think they're ridiculous results in how the preference farming has worked. So you have, if I'm correct, Transport Matters Party in one of the upper house electorates got 0.6% of the vote, and they get a seat because they get all the other micro parties' preferences. I think there's going to be three or five members of the upper house that basically, if you combined all their first preference votes, they probably wouldn't get past 3%.
Well, it does seem that that is going to be the case, and that you get some larger parties being squeezed out by these micro parties. You know, I thought one of the most sort of curious examples of that, I think there's one province, the Western Metropolitan province, where it looks as though the Derren Hinch Party, which has done very well out of preference harvesting elsewhere in Western Metro, you know, the Derren Hinch Party actually got about 7% of the vote, probably deserved to get somebody elected there. But it looks as though there's quite a prospect that they won't lose the seat, but actually deserve to get elected, because they'll lose to one of the micro parties, whereas they'll get people elected elsewhere, where you could probably say their claim to be elected was a bit thin.
Geoffrey, we're having trouble hearing
you. We just
need
you to stand still. If you're on a mobile, just stand still.
The window, does that sound better?
Yeah, that is better, yes.
So, okay, good. Reform of this system, many parliaments around the world, many upper house chambers have a 3 or 5% requirement, one to get funding. Look, the problem is, Geoffrey, how are we actually going to fix this problem? Because it would require a majority vote in the upper house. I assume that the Liberals might agree with Labor that this needs to change. And that's not to not deny a voice to those people who voted for the minor parties. But come on, let's be serious. 0.6%. I mean, you know, it's a rounding error.
Well, it does undermine, I think, the votes of those people who voted for the major minor party, which is actually the Greens in this case. So usually, you know, the Greens, I think, on a if there was the kind of voting system in place that operates at the Senate currently, Greens would probably have got four people in the upper house.
Yeah.
Would have lost one seat, and that one seat actually Derren Hinch's party. But it looks as though the Greens will get one, but they may not get anything else there. And it's even to a degree work against some of the major parties as well, because it does seem that when a major party does poorly, as Liberals have done in this election, that their representation can also fall so much down that potentially they can find themselves maybe not even electing one member at all in one province.
You know,
there's a possibility in Northern Metro that there may not be a single Liberal elected.
Do you think, Geoffrey, do you think there's much appetite to change this? I know, you know, at the end of the day, it has to be a majority in the upper house. I wouldn't have thought it would be that difficult, with Labor having potentially 19 and the Liberals, say, 11. That's more than enough numbers. Of course, you get all the micro parties offside. But do you think there's much appetite? Is this something that the Victorian government, the Andrews government, is going to have to take a hard look at? Or the fact that they won four seats in the upper house, they'll probably think, OK, well, we'll leave that alone.
Well, this is, I think, the big issue here, because obviously this system was introduced by a Labor government. I don't think at the time it was introduced by a Labor government. Mm. Much thought was given to these possible outcomes. But from Labor's viewpoint, you could say, well, you know, they've got 18 or 19 seats. There's this swarm of micro parties that's possible to deal with and bargain with on a one-on-one basis. And there's some evidence, I think, particularly in the Victorian context, that Labor might prefer to work with those parties than have to work, say, with a block of Greens.
Oh, yes.
So there's a bit of self-interest operating there. You know, I think you saw that in the last Parliament, for example. Labor probably tried to build up the profile of Fiona Patten and emphasise they were willing to work with her to agree to try to, as a kind of counterbalance to the Greens. But, yeah, that's the issue. On the other hand, I know some people in Labor do think it's a bad outcome. And there is also that possibility, of course, that when the wheel turns, you know, this could also be very disadvantageous for Labor as well.
Yeah, I'd like to think that, ultimately common sense will prevail, that I can't see any of those, let's call them crossbenchers, some of them crosser than others, working with Labor potentially, to amend this in some way, because it would require the Labor Party to acknowledge they made a mistake in when they revamped the system. Mm. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's a pretty ridiculous result that, you have a few thousand people vote for a candidate, and hundreds of thousands vote for another candidate, and that candidate doesn't get up.
Yeah, no, it's bizarre. It's really
bizarre. And I think it undermines the original reason why the upper house reforms were introduced, which was to provide a greater degree of democracy, to get away from the time when the upper house always tended to be, reliably controlled by the Conservatives in particular. And then, of course, briefly, of course, after 2002, Labor actually controlled it in their own right. But to have potentially the possibility for the upper house to operate more as a house of review.
Jeffrey, thank you very much for your time this morning and for sharing your thoughts with us. We have run out of time,
thanks,
unfortunately, and we will need to move on. But once the dust has settled, we'd love you to come into the studio. Oh, we've
lost
that's
him. What he thought of you.
We would like him to come back in and just have more of a chat about what all that means.
A quick comment here before we go to the break. Macca, what do you think of Daniel Andrews effectively offering Fiona Patten a job on air, on radio? It was an interesting move. I thought it was recognition of the hard work that she'd done on a number of issues.
And her role in public service.
And, the role that she played in the public arena and legislation, not just voting for it, in fact, in championing it. I wasn't offended by it.
No, I actually think, Macca, the challenge in this scenario is finding the right job for her.
Yes.
Because, she's used to being able to speak her own mind. And
yeah.
If she's working in the public service, you can't do those.
That's right, yeah.
You are there to actually implement the wishes of the government of the day.
Yeah. There are more gags there than at a leather party.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.